right, guys, welcome back. This is episode 4 of the Strength Academy podcast. I'm here with Mundo.
What's up, y'all?
All right, so today we're going to talk about equipment. Do you need it? What do you need? What's essential? What's not? Is it a good idea to use it all the time? So let's just get right into it. What do you think? What do you think that the most important piece of equipment for a weightlifter is?
I would say shoes.
Yep.
Shoes is probably the most important thing, and because you wouldn't ice skate with no ice skates.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. Or you wouldn't play football without cleats. It's just one of those pieces of equipment that goes along with the sport. If you don't have weightlifting shoes, and you're trying to compete in the sport or even do it at any kind of level other than just messing around, it's a good investment. And there's different heel heights, there's different materials, there's a bunch of different brands, but definitely weightlifting shoes is at the top of the list for me.
Yeah, that's the exact tip. I was thinking that was probably going to be, yeah, that's my answer as well. So I kind of think that if you're just starting out, you don't need to buy the most expensive pair of shoes you can find. You don't need to find something like super stylish and flashy and like, you know, $220 when they come out brand new, like the Lystung 2s were.
Lystung 2s, yeah.
And those are, I mean, they're pretty cool shoes, but if you're just starting out, get a pair of like Adidas Powerlift 3.0s. Those things are $85. The heel heights, I think 0.6, and they'll last a long time. And if you do it for a couple of years, like I know people that still lift in their original like Powerlift 2.0s.
Right.
That was the first pair of weightlifting shoes I ever had. They're super comfortable, they're flexible, and they don't really, they're budget friendly. Yeah. And then, you know, if you want to, you know, get a better shoe with like a more rigid heel and a little more lift down the line, you can always get a nicer pair of shoes down the line. But if you're just starting out, I mean, the Adidas Powerlifts are pretty great.
Yeah, I like the Romaleo 2s. I think that's probably my all-time favorite shoe. It's built like a tank. They've held up. Almost every weightlifter I've seen at the elite level have used them. And I think just Nike built a solid shoe for the sport. Now, I had the Romaleo 3s, and those were kind of garbage. And I had the experience where after about 3 months, they fell apart. The bottom of the sole peeled off, and then the insides that keep the tongue in place, those ripped as well. So I sent them back to Nike, and I was just, after that, I just didn't want anything to do with the Romaleo 3s anymore.
Yeah, and I've just seen that a couple of times. Like, it's always the sole issue, where like the sole starts to peel up a little bit. A lot of people really like those shoes because they're super light, and I mean, I imagine they're pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've just seen that issue with the bottom peeling off, and if you can get a shoe that won't happen for a little bit less, like the Romaleo 2s are a great shoe for sure.
Yeah. So aside from shoes, I would say the next most important thing is a belt. And the belt for me, I don't like using it at percentages anything less than maybe 80%. 85% is usually where I start to think about wearing it. But if you're struggling to use a belt at 75%, or if you're starting to think about using a belt and you're struggling with lifts at like 75-70%, you probably need to do more core work than you need to rely on a belt.
Well, and I mean, I think that it's not even necessarily doing more sit-ups or planks or anything like that. It's learning to control your abdominal muscles while you're squatting or while you're lifting. Because a lot of that, like, you can be super, I mean, I'm sure you've seen this plenty of times where people are super strong at, like, weighted ab exercises, but are really unstable when they get under a bar.
Yeah.
You know, so those things aren't always connected. Like, it's good to train your abdominals, but, like, learning how to control your abdominals and how to brace and how to breathe before throwing the belt on is kind of what I always, like, like people to do.
Yeah.
Is like, if you can squat well without a belt, the belt is just backup for those heavier lifts.
Right.
As opposed to if you're always relying on the belt to help keep your pressure, you're going to be at a disadvantage if, what if your belt breaks on your second attempt clean and jerk? And you have one more lift to do, and no one's going to lend you their belt.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, you need to have a reserve of knowing how to lift and what it feels like to lift without a belt for emergency situations. But also, it's, I think, just you're going to be a better lifter the more control you have over your torso. So, like, if you can really brace and breathe, you're going to be in a better spot going forward. Like, okay. You're going to understand the movement better.
Yeah, I agree. Because I've seen that happen to lifters on the platform as well, where they have a belt on and they're in the middle of their clean and the belt pops off. And that's kind of why I'm not a fan of Velcro belts, but when a belt pops off, like if that's the thing that you're relying on to help you stay braced in that core area, then yeah, you're not gonna have a good time trying to make that jerk or stand up out of that clean. So I think it is really important to know how to brace that and create that intra-abdominal pressure without the belt. The belt is kind of like an enhancement tool. Like, it just helps you provide just that little bit of extra intra-abdominal pressure to push against when you're doing your lift, for those heavy lifts. But yeah, so like, I like leather belts. I like the ones that buckle in.
Yeah.
Definitely not really a fan of Velcro belts. They might have a little more give, but I like the idea of the belt not being able to pop off.
Yeah, I've had plenty of experiences moving up and down weight classes so often that, like, with Velcro belts, like, if I'm a little bit heavier toward the end of a training cycle, hitting the bottom of a squat and having your belt pop off is just, well, it's terrifying. Yeah. It's not fun. You get knocked out of position. So yeah, I've always been a fan of the classic super simple leather belt. I think for Olympic lifting, you don't really need much more than like a belt with a 4-inch back that buckles in the front. It's the real small, like, trying to do cleans with like a big 4-inch powerlifting belt, it might be legal for competition, but it's really constricting on those ribs. If you have a kind of shorter torso, you're going to be like smashing your floating ribs on the top of the belt, and you can't really, you lose your fluidity in the motion. Yeah. Where like the powerlifting belt really like locks everything in, which is great for pulling a heavy deadlift, but for trying to move fast on a clean, it can kind of like bind you up a little bit.
Yeah, no, I agree. And so with USA Weightlifting, one of the rules is the belt has to be 12 centimeters or less. So you don't want to train with equipment that you're not going to be able to use on the platform anyway. And you, with all the stuff that we're mentioning, you should probably be training with it, you know, well into your training cycle. Don't try any new stuff before you go out on the platform. Like, there was this one guy that we had on our team, and he bought a brand new pair of weightlifting shoes the day of the competition, and the first time he ever used them was on the platform. And he didn't go to the training hall and try them on. He just laced them on, buckled them in, and wore them out there.
He bought them at the Nike booth at the American Open Series 2, like 2 hours before his session. And he was like, no, I mean, and he had a pretty good meet.
Yeah, it was,
but I was prepared for the worst. You know, I personally, it's, you know,
this is not going to end well. But no, he surprised us, and he did pretty well, despite the brand new equipment. Okay, so what's the next thing?
So I would say the next important piece of equipment would probably be a pair of weightlifting straps for me.
Okay.
I think that sometimes, yes, people start to depend on straps like a crutch, where it's they'll only let, like, you see people strapping into the empty bar.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, I don't think you need to do that.
That's a bit much.
But what straps really, what I like about straps is that they teach people to relax their arms well. Because we have, you know, we're always battling that idea that I need to flex my elbows or, you know, keep my arms as stiff and rigid as I possibly can to move the weight.
Right.
And if you're doing your pulls or reps from the hang or deadlifts with straps, you can really focus on relaxing your arms and feeling your upper back holding the weight on the pull. So I think that it's helpful for technique. And then I also am a big fan of using things like front squat with straps for flexibility training and warm-ups. So for me personally right now, that would be my, you know, I use my straps more than I use my belt. Just because I do that kind of stretching exercise with them.
Right.
And like to really focus on keeping my arms relaxed and that kind of work on my technique and pulling work. That and when you're training 4 or 5 days a week, your hands get pretty sore. So if you have heavy deadlifts, but you know you have to clean and jerk in 2 days, straps can also kind of just make sure that you don't feel like your hands are raw hamburger meat when you get to the end of the week.
That's true. So like for me, straps are, they're just a training aid. If I'm doing hang work, I even try not to use straps for that, unless it's multiple reps. If it's like 2 hang snatches and then a full snatch, I'll not use straps for that. Same thing with hang cleans. I won't use straps for cleans. So I personally don't like using straps for cleans. Because I had my own personal experience where my wrist got caught. It couldn't turn over all the way and it got trapped on my knee and bent my wrist. Really bad, and it took me probably 3 months to heal from that injury. But I've seen when people use straps and they get trapped underneath a clean and they can't get out of it because their elbows are pinned in that position. So for me, it's more of not just safety, but I just want to stay away from the possibility of that happening to me again. So I don't recommend people doing that.
Yeah, I mean, cleans with straps, I think I kind of have a 50-50 on that, where I think that, you know, yeah, that elbow pinning, I've had that happen as well. I wasn't wearing straps at the time, but I've done that, and it is unpleasant for months. And I mean, that's, you know, a wrist sprain like that is a huge pain. So I think that if you're gonna clean with straps, there's a couple of really important things that you've got to have in line. You have to be very mobile and have a good front rack position and a really good squat that's upright. Because if you're tipped over at all, those elbows are ever closer to your knees. You have to be experienced enough to know how to miss if you're in your squat where you just keep the elbows high and fall backwards and the bar's not going to hit you in the neck, but you're not trying to fall out and pull the elbows back right, and slamming them into the floor with the weight in your hands now, which is a story that I've heard about a guy that broke both his wrists doing that.
Yeah.
So I think that there's definitely some gamble there. But I think for lighter weights, or you're doing, you know, 5 hang power cleans in a row, then maybe you can do that. But I agree. I think that for most people, most of the time, cleaning with straps is not worth the risk.
Yeah.
Unless it's something you're very comfortable knowing that if I miss, I'm just going to be able to gently lower myself down because it's only 80 kilos.
Yeah, you know? That makes sense. Because like, I guess the percentage and the amount of weight on the bar matters as well. Because if you're power cleaning 70 kilos or whatever, maybe 60, 70% is, you'll probably be okay. But if you're going for a 1 rep max clean or a 1 rep max hang clean, like maybe just put the straps aside. If you can't hang on to the bar, then you probably shouldn't be trying to lift it with straps.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I kind of like, you know, I think of straps as pulling exercises and 3 or more reps.
Yeah, okay.
And outside of that range, I don't really think you need need to be worrying about it for your full lifts.
Right. So, like, and then for materials, a lot of strap companies make them out of some various materials. So some of them are like, what is it? That
nylon,
and not all the nylon is the same quality. So, or the best ones are probably leather or cotton.
Yeah,
but nylon definitely. I've had a pair of nylon straps, and they just destroy your wrist. Like, you have them tight, and it's just digging into your wrist. Just think about being handcuffed with nylon ropes tied around your wrist. It's probably not very comfortable. But yeah, so leather straps are the kind that I use. They're broken in. They're well, you know, once they get soft, you can hang on to them really well, and there is a bit of give if you need to just release them quickly. But nylon, I think, is probably the one that I try to stay away from.
Yeah, the problem for me with the nylon strap is that they take a long time to get broken in. So, like, if you have a nice wide one that's not like a half-inch nylon strap, but it's like an inch and a half or an inch, they're a little bit more comfortable when you lock them in. But the problem with them for me is that they're really slick.
Yeah.
When you first start using them, and they take a while to kind of get worn enough to where they really grip the bar.
Right.
So, yeah, I feel like those are the ones that, for me, like, I just don't have the patience to break them in. And I really like the way that I use a cotton pair of straps from Warm Body Cold Mind.
Right.
And I think those are really nice. They've lasted me over a year, and they're starting to fray a little bit. And that's the downside of the cotton strap, is that it's broken in right away.
Yeah.
It grips the bar really well. But it'll wear out faster than nylon, and it'll wear out faster than leather.
Yeah.
So I think that leather straps are, well, really durable, and they last a really long time, but you do have to break them in at the start.
Yeah. Yeah, and then depending on what you're willing to spend on them, too, nylon straps are probably going to be a couple bucks, and then the cotton ones, you know, above that, probably by $10 or $20, and then the leather straps, or maybe another $20 on top of that. So yeah, it just depends on what your budget is and what you're willing to spend on that kind of stuff.
But the nice thing about, you know, all the equipment so far that we've mentioned is that a good pair of weightlifting shoes will last you for years.
Yeah.
A good leather weightlifting belt, your grandchildren will use it. Like, there's like it's not going to wear out.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, so, like, okay, well, for instance, I have, what do you think about wrist wraps? Because I have leather wrist wraps, and they're way better than the ones that I've had that are just the cloth ones. I mean, I've used cloth ones, and they've held up, but the leather ones that I have are just, they absolutely lock my wrists in. I still have the flexibility to get under the clean and you know, get my wrist position in a good spot. But it also provides enough support to where I'm not worried about my wrist bending back or anything like that on the clean. So what do you think about wrist wraps?
So I used to use wrist wraps a lot more often than I do now. When I was first starting out, I would, you know, my wrists were pretty sore because you're adjusting to lifting weights all the time.
Right.
And so I've always used the... not the elastic ones, but the just plain strip of cotton with a string on it, and you kind of cinch it in. I think those are pretty nice, like, especially if you do kind of get sore wrists. But I sometimes wonder if wearing your wrist wraps all the time prevents some strengthening of that joint over the long run. Because one thing that I've noticed is that when I transitioned away from wearing them a whole lot, I had less frequent aches in my wrists. And that's just personal anecdote, but I kind of wonder if some of that was building back up without them added some extra strength to that joint.
Right.
And now I'll still put them on if I'm feeling sore or if I'm doing something really heavy. But I've tried to lately kind of not wear them until I feel like I need them.
Yeah.
And it's worked out pretty well so far, but I think that protecting the wrists is huge. So if you feel like you need to wear them or that you're unstable there or achy there very often, I think it's a great thing to wear. I just sometimes wonder if we'd all be better off just strengthening those joints a little bit more.
Right.
And only putting them on when it's necessary.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me because, like, well, I treat my wrist wraps like my belt. Like, I don't use it warming up. I don't even use them probably up until maybe I'm at 70% of my lift. And even then, on some days, I'll just try to get through the whole session without them. But if I'm going for a max or like a heavy single or something like that, I'll put them on at like the 75% range. That way I just know I have a little bit of wrist support, and it's not about keeping my wrist warm because I do have the flexibility and I'm used to having lifts in that overhead position and keeping them stabilized. I just like having that extra support when I'm going for those heavy lifts. So I don't use them warming up or like I said, if I can get through a day where it's just powers or something, where it's not really, really heavy, then I'll just do my session without that. And I'm the same way with knee wraps as well. So for I'll wear knee sleeves, the neoprene knee sleeves, for kind of anything that has a lot of squatting in it. But I'll have days where I don't use those either. I'll just try to get through sessions without the knee sleeves. But for knee wraps, like, and I'm talking about the kind that look like ACE bandages that wrap around the knee really tight, I'll try not to use those until I get to about 75%, because if I can't squat a 75% lift without my knees, you know, having that support, then I probably need to do some extra work or do something to keep me from having to use them at that percentage.
Yeah, I agree for sure when it comes to knee wraps and sleeves. So the problem with discussing knee wraps and sleeves is that there's such a wide spectrum of them.
Right.
So, you know, like the simple hook grip knee sleeve that's just neoprene is not really providing any support. It's just keeping the joint warm.
Right.
As opposed to... I'm going to sneeze. Oh, sorry about that. As opposed to the thicker kind of 4 millimeter Ray-Ban neoprene sleeves that give a little bit of compression and support. And then there's even more extreme kind of powerlifting knee sleeves that will really kind of help. So you kind of have those gradients, and you have those gradients in wraps as well, because you have the ACE bandage style, like Russian style knee wrap, all the way up to super tense powerlifting knee wraps that you sometimes see the Colombians wear.
Right.
And I kind of think that, yeah, I mean, save those for when you need them. Like, if you're warming up right away, maybe wear your sleeves to keep your knees warm. But if you're putting your wraps on right away, then you might not be getting some of the strengthening of the knee joint that you could be getting otherwise.
Right.
And I think, you know, I think a lot of people use their knee wraps like knee sleeves. They put them on kind of loose and just keep them warm.
Right.
So it even kind of goes within that. It's just like, how tight are your knee wraps right now?
That's true.
If they're cutting off circulation, okay, maybe you have them on too tight. But if you wrap your knees once and then never touch them again, and they're comfortable the whole time you're training, they're acting more like the knee sleeve than a knee wrap.
That's true, and that makes sense. And then in USA Weightlifting, in competition, we're allowed to double wrap. So if you have neoprene sleeves, you're allowed to wrap on top of those with knee wraps. And so for me, I'll do that if I'm going for a really heavy squat or if I'm doing a one rep max clean and jerk. So, but that's like the top end lifts for me. And I tried to use my knee wraps just by themselves and really tightening them down, but it pinched like this back nerve above my calf, like right below the kneecap.
Oh, shit.
Like on the left side, and it pinched it, and it made it to where I couldn't squat. Like it had done something along the line of my calf, and so I had to go get it dry needled, and it finally loosened up. But like, I don't like wrapping my knees with the wraps just by themselves, and then trying to cinch them down really tight, because it did that, and now I want to avoid doing that again. So, but yeah, so the common thing among all these pieces of equipment is that one of my old friends, he used to refer to them as crutches. And the point of a crutch is to just get you through a point where you don't have to use them anymore. But in the case of all this equipment, you should consider them a tool to help you at the top end, because you can't lift those weights, or you're not able to lift those weights without them at that point. But eventually you'll get past them. Like, maybe wearing wrist wraps at 70 kilos, that used to be your one rep max, but now you don't. It's like a 70% lift or something, you know, like that. So eventually you get past the point where you have to use them at that percentage, and then you just end up using them at the top end ranges. So for me, that's my approach to any type of the equipment that we've talked about and the ones that I use. So what's your take on that, Grayson?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, the way I like to think about them is, if you're really only using them for your true top end sets, you're essentially making all of the training you're doing harder. So if you're doing three sets of three at 70% and you don't wear a belt, it's harder than if you would have worn a belt, which on the day, you're not going to appreciate.
Yeah.
Because you're tired and it's the last thing and you're like, I'm tired, I should put a belt on. But if you're making that harder, when you do warm up in the back room and you're getting ready for a meet or you're going for a max attempt, and you put that belt on, or you wrap your knees, it's almost like giving yourself a psychological edge where you're like, oh, now I have this extra thing.
Right,
and I know I can do this without it, but I've got this extra thing. It's my superpower. I'm even stronger now. And you have this kind of, because you're not used to wearing it all the time,
right,
it's special when you get to wear it. You know that when you put it on, it means you're about to do something heavy.
Right.
And you kind of have that built in. So then you're putting your belt on and you're like, yeah, this is a belt worthy lift. I'm gonna go yeah, crush this.
Right.
So like, if you're, you know, just so conditioned to wearing it all the time that you're like, oh man, I put my belt on that one day and 70% was still hard.
Right.
Then you're like, then you don't think that that belt's helping you that much.
That's true.
But if you save it for those maximal efforts, you kind of end up in a, oh, I can do anything now that I got this thing going.
Right. Yeah, so, okay. One of the last things that I wanted to kind of mention was compression pants or compression gear in general. So I like to wear Virus stuff, and there's other companies that make compression pants, but that seems to be the most prevalent one in the weightlifting community. And for me, I feel like the compression helps. Like, it kind of keeps my legs from taking a huge beating, and I have less fatigue after I wear them. It might be a placebo effect, but for me, when I can tell the difference when I wear them and when I don't wear them. Like, my legs stay more warm, I feel more capable the next day of continuing my training, and when I don't, I just have that little bit of extra fatigue. Sometimes I also get like the barbell rips my hair out if I don't have them on, but yeah, so I like training with compression pants. It kind of simulates wearing a singlet too, because it has that same feel to it. But for me, I like compression pants. I don't know what you think about those.
I mean, I think that they do a few really good things. So the compression, like you said, it kind of aids in the bar being able to move up really smoothly, and you don't end up ripping your own hair out, or if you're real sweaty, it doesn't get stuck in your thighs, like yeah, that sort of thing. But aside from that, like, you're keeping the skin really warm because the heat's kind of being trapped there under the pant. So that can help keep the joints warm and just kind of keep the muscles, you know, steady and tense, and not, like, prevents excess movement.
Yeah.
A lot of people use them if they're flying to competitions, because a really common thing when you get on an airplane is your ankles kind of balloon up.
Yeah.
So the compression pant can help promote lymphatic flow. So kind of circulating excess fluid that's kind of accumulating in your legs back up. So there's some ideas that if you've done some hard training and you wear some super tight compression gear afterward, you're going to be promoting flow in and out of that area and improving blood circulation and lymph circulation. I don't find them to be particularly comfortable because I have a tendency to get ingrown hairs I wear like super tight pants. Okay. So I like they just kind of they make my leg hair hurt when I'm done. Okay. But you know, so I think that they're really good, and I think that they do simulate that wearing a singlet, which is nice because if you're used to training in tights, you're not going to feel that weird when you have to put a singlet on and lift in front of a group of people.
That's true.
And I do like the like flexibility and freedom of movement that they kind of provide. But yeah, I just think they're kind of uncomfortable, so I don't really wear them a whole lot.
Okay.
But they can help for sure.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so one last thing. So barbells and plates. I think a lot of people pretty much have what they have, right? So they're getting by on whatever barbell and whatever plate they can afford. And there's some people that are snobby about equipment, like, oh, I only lift on the finest Eleco, you know, barbell and plates, or, you know, if it's not DHS or USEKA, you know, I don't even touch it. It's not worth my time. So for me, you know, I haven't always lifted on the best equipment. But I have noticed that when you lift on better equipment, it makes your training go in a different direction. Because like, if you're training on a really, you know, a bar that doesn't spin that well, it's like a, you know, bushing bar, and it doesn't have the same feel for the knurling and the spin as maybe one of the top end bars. That's sometimes why you get on the platform and things feel lighter because the bar spins faster. It's, you know, the quality of the bar is different. So do you think that having a specific barbell or certain type of plates actually makes a difference when you're training for things?
So the first weightlifting competition I ever did, we had trained only on bushing bars leading up to it. And we'd only lifted in pounds, so there's a lot of extra math going on.
Yeah.
And when the warm-up area was all bushing bars, because this was a meet at Define Fitness for some reason.
Really?
Yeah. It was the Barnhold Memorial, and a few of us from the CrossFit gym had gone down there. And so we're warming up on not the greatest bars, but there's an Eleco set on the platform. And I threw my first snatch clear behind me, because I did not know the bar was going to spin like that.
Right.
I had no idea. I'd never touched a bearing bar before. And it was my technique was all over the place. Well, right. Because it was horrible. And because I wasn't used to this bar.
Right.
So I think that the quality of a bar matters. And I think it matters a lot more than the quality of a plate.
Okay.
I think that having a bar that spins, you don't need an Eleco bar. I think that like a 5 needle bearing bar is great. Like, it's going to spin. It's going to be smooth. There's not going to be that sticking point. It'll probably last longer without having to do maintenance on it.
Yeah.
So I think as long as you have a medium quality bar, like I go back and forth and I lift on pretty much every bar in the gym, and I kind of prefer my 5 needle bearing Penlay to the Eleco bar.
Yeah.
Like, I just like the way it feels. Like, it's a good feel. I'm used to it. It spins smoothly, and it doesn't throw me off when I use a competition bar.
Right.
So I think that you can, you know, get by with using, you know, good quality bars, but you don't need to have $2,000 barbells to get good training in.
Yeah.
With plates, right. It matters even less. Because to me, like, the important quality in a plate is that it weighs 10 kilos, or close enough. And for training plates, they don't need to be super calibrated, because if you did 86 kilos instead of 85 kilos, or 84 instead of 85, you don't know the difference, your body doesn't know the difference. All intents and purposes, you did 85 kilos. And as long as they don't careen across the gym when you drop them, and they have a nice dead bounce, a plate is a plate.
Right, yeah.
Like, I it's important to have calibrated plates for competitions, because you know, it matters when people set records, and if it's your official score, you want that to be very dialed in. But if you're just lifting on Saturday morning and you're doing percentage work or building to a heavy, you still lifted whatever you lifted that day. It's practicing the movement that matters, and whether that's within 0.3 grams of the actual weight, you're not going to know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's like, I like to call the small half kilo plates the wafers of shame.
Yeah.
Because it's like, come on, if you really just round up to the two or go, you know, to the next plate, like zero, like 80, don't put 81 on there, just go to 82. But I know sometimes with percentage work, you might end up with that number on there, but to me, they're funny because, like, you don't know what the tolerance is of the plates, and it doesn't really matter.
What I think is even funnier is, have you seen people will take the wafers of shame but only put one of them on one side?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I broke my PR by half a kilo.
Come on. No, yeah, I have seen people do that before, and it's a bit silly to me.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing to do.
But for barbells, I've seen videos of guys in Cameroon lifting on, you know, a rusty old bar on pieces of cardboard with wooden weights. Like, you don't need the fanciest stuff. Yeah, like we've said, it probably makes you better in the long run just because you know how fast the turnover is on a better bar and things like that. Is it absolutely necessary? No, because people get it done in various ways on various pieces of equipment. But yeah, maybe training on better equipment makes you a little better, though, at the end of the day.
I mean, I think that it just, you know, if the bar spins, it's going to be easier to adjust when you get into a meet.
Right.
But you can have a bushing bar that spins really well and still have a great training day on it. Like, it's not that important. As long as the bar is smooth and doesn't not spin.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so you can get good training in on a bushing bar for sure. I mean, we all have for a long time. And some of those bars hold up really well. Some of those are really nice. Like a Rogue Ohio bar, you can do pretty much anything with it forever, and it's fine.
Yeah, and it holds up really well. Okay, well, that was the last thing that we want to talk about for the equipment episode.
So I think rather than question time, I'm just going to open up a little bit about my week and kind of what to do when shit really falls apart and kind of sucks. So I had to put my dog to sleep on Monday. And I just kind of wanted to talk about how that impacts mindset and mood and training and diet. So, you know, it was, she had cancer for a while and kind of knew it was coming, but she tanked really fast last weekend. And, you know, so all week it's kind of been, I was going to try to, you know, stick with my training, and I've been eating a really specific way for a long time. And, you know, just kind of accepting the fact that when things like that happen and things are really rough, it's okay to not beat yourself up about not hitting your macros that day and, like, not piling on to stuff that you're already going through. And I ended up having a couple opportunities and started trying to warm up, and it's just not in it. Yeah. And, you know, kind of giving yourself that time of, like, not making it worse for yourself by saying, oh, this happened and I didn't train and I didn't, you know, stick to my diet and I, you know, ate some candy because I felt like shit, and, you know.
Yeah, no.
So, you know, if you have something going on, it's okay to, like, give yourself that time to kind of process and deal with some things. And if that, and that for me, that's not always like a super healthy outlet, because it's, you know, I feel better when I do train, but, you know, sometimes you just can't muster and it's kind of hard to get through. And what I've kind of been thinking about a lot in the last couple of days is the I think it's like the Buddhist notion is that when we talked about suffering, it's kind of just semantics and how you're defining the word, but that, you know, pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. So yeah. The idea that, you know, remembering that when one thing is going, like if you experience an emotion and something is really hard, you can accept the fact that you're feeling that without brooding on it,
right?
And without letting it distort what else you see. Because no matter how hard this has been, there are so many other areas in my life that are going really well. And just trying to kind of keep your head up and not let one thing being bad dictate how you feel about the rest of your life. Because there's a lot of things that are really good, and that's really sad. And it's okay to feel sad about it, but it's not okay, in my mind, to pretend like that makes everything else terrible as well.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I don't have a whole lot to add to that other than life happens for all of us. We all experience, you know, ups and downs and in the various ways that life can throw things at us. And it's not just about just be grateful for everything that happens, but be grateful for the not good things that happen.
Yeah.
Because they happen to everybody. And if you can be grateful for the hard things, then that makes the good things that much better.
Yeah. And, you know, if you are having a, you know, profound feeling of, you know, loss or something like that, remembering that the reason you feel that is because of all those moments of, like, enrichment that you had from that.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, not that it's just this loss. It's that loss is there because of the times that you've had and those right. things that you've built up. And, you know, avoid it. Trying to avoid... I think a lot of times when people feel bad, they do things that end up making them feel worse.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get sad and you drink too much, and then the next day you're hurting from that and you're hurting from the emotional things and you just feel even worse. And it's a really interesting tendency that I think we are sometimes really self-destructive, you know, where right. it's, if you feel like something's going wrong, you give yourself more things to go wrong because you feel like you deserve that.
Right.
And, you know, avoiding those, like, and I'm not the best. I certainly haven't done a good job of eating in a way that doesn't make my body hurt or anything like that. But just trying to be cognizant of, like, am I just punishing myself because I already feel bad?
Yeah, that's hard. I think you shouldn't suppress the way you feel about anything. Like, it's okay to feel sad. It's okay to grieve a loss. If you have a broken heart, you know, it's okay to acknowledge that. And to go through that process. The thing that becomes self-destructive is when people hang on to those things. And that's what makes the suffering occur. You know, so that's when suffering is optional, because if you hang on into that state, that's when people can't move forward. So, you know, it's okay to grieve. It's okay to feel sad. It's okay to feel heartbroken or angry or upset because that happened. And go through that process. But hanging on to it, eventually you have to move on. And it's those people that can't move on, it's those people that drink or find some other way to try to cope with it, that, you know, that's when they become self-destructive, and they just go down that spiral of, you know, everything sucks and nothing's worth living for and things like that, that type of mentality.
Yeah, so I think, you know, whatever you're going through, try to frame it in the light of, you know, what if you're feeling that strongly about something, there was something there. And,
yeah.
you know, it's, if you're heartbroken or, you know, just be appreciative of the time that you did have and, like, know that it's, you're going to be fine and that you don't have to stew in your own misery and that
yeah.
the rest of the things in your life are still there.
Yeah, exactly. If there's no value, there's no loss. You know, if you didn't value something, it's not, it didn't feel anything about losing it. So, all right. Well, didn't want to end on too sad of a note, but just something to think about, y'all. So think about the equipment. Think about, you know, some of the things that life throws at you and continuing to move forward. But that's all we have for today. Anything else, Grayson?
No, just keep doing you guys. And, yeah, get ready for some heavy lifting next week.
All right, y'all. Happy lifting.